Our guest on Simply Folk today is prolific songwriter and performer, originally from Whitewater, Wisconsin, now living in New England. He is currently roaming the countryside and the world in support of his new album, Blood Brothers. Jeffrey Folkelt, welcome to Simply Folk.
Thanks for having us in.
We'd like to hear some music right away because it looks like you guys are itching to play, and we'd love to hear from you. So let's start with a song first, and then we'll get some introductions going. What are you going to play for us first here, guys?
All right, well, we just left Iowa City this morning, so we're going to give you an Iowa-themed song. This is called Des Moines. It's the only song in our repertoire that has a French title. That night in Des Moines, the garnered streets and dying sunset building cut with shade. We sent our smoke up through the streetlights. We sent our prayers out through an old PA. That night in Des Moines, that night in Des Moines, we were too late for supper. We sat at the bar, we drank three beers, and we walked to the house, filling up with no one. God was listening, he cupped his ear. That night in Des Moines, that I threw your rug in the back seat, and I shook your hand. And the heat from the asphalt, well, it was liquid and dancing. And we walked to the front door like a rock and roll band. That night in Des Moines, that night. That night in Des Moines, we slept at your mom's house. We drove east in the darkness. I toured a whole new day. And the lights on the big trucks were like gun camera tracers. On I-80 at midnight, there was nothing to say.
Lovely, lovely stuff. Thank you so much, Jeffrey. Thank you, guys. Before I forget, can you just tell us who you're playing with? You have a mighty fine band here.
Yeah, I will introduce the band. For those of you listening at home, to stage right is Eric Haywood out of Mount Vernon, Iowa, originally by way of a variety of other places, Los Angeles and North Carolina most recently, on a pedal steel guitar. Directly behind me is Mr. Billy Conway, who is originally from Owatonna, Minnesota, and lived all over. Now lives in Montana. He's playing the drums. And to my left, Mr. Jeremy Moses Curtis out of Providence, Rhode Island. The only non-Midwesterner in the band, but he's been sort of honorarily inducted.
Right on. Yeah. Rhode Island, you've come a long way to travel with these guys.
So. Yeah.
Thank you all so much for stopping in here. I know you're on your way from Iowa and to Milwaukee, so we're really glad that we were able to sort of kidnap you for a little bit here before you get back on the road. What's the story of that song you just played, Your Only One with a French Title?
The story of that song is I tried really hard not to tell the story.
Okay.
In the story of the song, I tried to tell all the way around it without ever being very explicit about what was happening. But the actual story behind the song, Eric and I released a record and toured it over here in the States after having been on the road in Europe for about a month with the same album that had just come out in the spring of 06. And we got to Des Moines, Iowa, and there was some confusion about what time the gig started, and so they had printed one time, and I had told everybody a different time on my resources, and so we got there, and there's just nobody around. It was a hot day, and not unlike this one, and so we kind of fooled around all afternoon, and then we got there and found out we were late, and we were supposed to have been there before, so we only had time to set up our stuff and have a few beers very fast because we weren't going to get to eat dinner. And then we sat down, we played this show for about six people.
Oh, dear.
That was one of my favorite shows of all time, and sometimes that happens. You have a beautiful show. So I was trying to get at that idea in the song.
Right on. I was going to say it sounds like a classic musician's nightmare, only it was in real life, but then you're saying it turned out to be a great experience. So
yeah.
That's really
cool. Yeah, it was fun. Yeah, I mean, it's not, you would think that it's hard to play a show for nobody. It's not particularly. What's hard is that the few people who did show up feel badly for you, and you can feel that coming off of them.
Right, you can feel the angst coming from them. Right.
Yeah, you'd rather buy everybody a drink and sit and talk for a minute.
Right on. Well, I'm pretty sure they were glad you played for them, so. Well, that was your only French number you had said. What do you have another one for us that we can talk about here?
Yeah.
All right. Looking forward to it.
So this is a little bit louder one. This is called Slow Talker. I wrote this for my friend who we just played with last night, Mr. Bo Ramsey of Iowa City, electric guitar player.
Slow talker, I called and I woke you up, and I wonder who I thought I was when I knew you for a little while. Did I know is that just your style? Deep water, you're like a river underground. Speak thunder, never makes a sound. There's one note that you can't play. There's one word that you can't say. There's one prayer that you can't pray. Got your collar turned up, cool. you keep on right, I'm right behind you. There's one note if you can play.
Beautiful. Thank you. I wish we had an audience here. We should be whooping and hollering and clapping, but that's what it's like to record here on a Saturday. Sometimes we're lucky enough to get some people in here, but I am clapping loudly in my mind. Thank you guys so much. A song about a very real man, not fiction, that's nonfiction. Do you tend to like to write about real experiences you've personally had and people you personally know, or do you sometimes spin off into just something that's just a creation out of other pieces, or do you have any particular kind of approach to your storytelling?
I think all of the above. There's, you know, different songs tend to call for different approaches, and maybe they grow out of, you know, little bits and pieces. I tend to carry around a notebook, and that notebook is where I would collect the stuff that comes out of nowhere, and that's the stuff that's the most interesting. So I didn't really know what I was thinking about too much on that song. I had the refrain that I wrote down in a book, and then I was remembering that when I met Bo Ramsey, I wanted to work on a record with him some years after I met him, and I didn't know if he'd even remember me, but I called him, and I didn't realize, because I'm a musician, and sometimes you don't know what day it is, and that's the thing. It was Saturday. And he was in the Midwest, and I was out east, and so I called and woke him up about 7 o'clock. I'd been up for hours drinking coffee and thinking about stuff, and I sort of got him out of bed to ask him if he wanted to work on a record with me. So that's where that song started. I don't know. They don't always have to be literal and, you know, telling the actual truth, and telling the truth can be pretty different operations.
Right on. You perform and record and write also with your spouse, Chris Delmhorst?
We don't write together. That's not a thing that happens.
Okay, interesting.
We do frequently submit stuff to editing. She's a very good editor, and she tends to be good at figuring out where to trim the fat musically or lyrically on a tune. And I do a little bit of troubleshooting for her as well that way. But we do record together, at least we have recently. Last fall, we toured a record with this band, and we went all over the country for her new album, which is called The Wild, and we worked on that one together. We co-produced it and spent time in the studio. And that was the first time we'd really done that in over a decade at that point.
Right on. It was Redbird, right, before that you...
Right, and Redbird didn't happen in a studio. That was, we just roped an expensive microphone to the ceiling so we couldn't knock it over if we drank too much beer, and it was at
a house in
Fort Atkinson, yeah.
Do you think, does it feel different to work with your spouse as opposed to, you know, working with one of the guys? I know there's, you know, pluses and minuses and all kinds of different things about that we've all experienced, those of us who do work with our spouses, and hence, you know, the fiction nonfiction trap, you know, is that song about me? But do any thoughts come to mind in working with somebody who's also a family member as opposed to just one of the guys?
It takes some time to figure out how to do that well, and I think you have to be pretty far into your relationship and pretty comfortable before you're willing to get up on stage and display whatever your particular relationship pathology is to everybody else. When you just get started, that can be a pretty vulnerable feeling, you know, you're used to going on stage, and no matter what you want to do, you're still going to go up there and have a certain game face on. And that's not normally the face that you would present to the person that you share a house with and, pay the bills and all that stuff. So it takes a little settling into, but once, you know, we had both been doing this for quite a long time, and we all know and love each other, you know, the band, and we had my now 10-year-old daughter in the car or the van the whole time, and
we had
gone over to Europe together that way, so it was really like a family band. That's what it
felt like.
Right
on. Yeah, it seems like such a sort of recurring crucible throughout music history, spouses, current, former, ex, spouses-to-be who work together, and there's all this extra fabric that goes along with that, but then such amazing music can come out of it. It's almost like the struggle sometimes just produces this rich, fertile soil for amazing projects sometimes, I think.
Yeah, that certainly can be the case. I mean, we live together and we have a life, and we don't, it's not like the Andy Griffith Show where we sit on the porch every night and sing songs, we rarely engage musically together that way in our daily lives. So to get to go out and share the thing that we're both really passionate about on the road is, it's really delightful. It was really fun.
Right on. So precious.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear some more music. I'll stop talking here. I'd love to hear another piece from you guys.
So this is a song called Heart to the Husk that I wrote about one of the nights right before I left Wisconsin. I moved out east. I packed up my truck and I drove everything out there because I was going to get married. And I sat down at the Bark River, which is out between Whitewater and where I grew up in Fort Atkinson, where I was living, and I burned a whole bunch of stuff I didn't want to carry with me. So old, the contents of old steamer trunks and full of letters and journals and stuff I didn't need to have with me anymore, photographs even. So, and then it got kind of windy, and I was afraid I was going to burn down the whole place.
Right.
It's the danger of being a sentimental person here. It's called Heart to the Husk. Love.
beautiful. Let the last note of that pedal steel just drift off. I'm personally just really tickled to see a pedal steel in here because it's been a while, and it just, the whole song is just so beautiful. Both the pedal steel melodies and the vocal melody. It's so hard to qualify and quantify what a beautiful melody is. Do you ever think about that, or do they just sort of pour into your head? You know, people know something beautiful when they hear it, but they can't always say why they think it's beautiful. Some of it's sort of subjective to the person listening, but I think there's no question that there are beautiful turns of note and melody. Do you think about that? Do notes come to you first, or sometimes words first?
I'm not a particularly, or really at all, trained musician, and I don't read music. And my parents tried to make me go to piano lessons when I was a little kid, and I didn't like that at all because it felt like they were confusing music, which was something I was pretty naturally comfortable with and, you know, relatively good at, with what looked like math to me, with the, you know, all the little shapes and numbers and things. So I didn't like that at all. But I don't think a lot about melody and structure until I'm already partway into a tune and I have some beachhead established melodically or structurally. Then you might think about how you could strengthen a melody by creating more tension or relieving some tension by making a change, or formally making a change, between structures. But I don't overthink the melodic side of things particularly, and I don't think I could if I wanted to. It's not really in there.
Right on. It seems in all the conversations I've had that seems to be kind of the recurring theme, that it just comes from somewhere, and then you work on it from there. But it's really hard to describe. You know, people ask that all the time, like, how do you construct a melody? But they don't really necessarily ask the same thing of a painter. You know, well, did you mathematically calculate exactly where you would put that kind of pink? It's more of just like a feeling. I don't know if that's your experience with getting your tune sort of from the universe or from inside your own brain.
Yeah, I think that I can't speak to anybody else's process, but I certainly seem to wake up with something in my head, or, you know, it's like, you know, you're painting the fence and you start whistling, you know.
Right.
Everybody's had that experience, and who knows where that comes from.
Now, you mentioned that you've been doing this since you were a child. Did you start off humming things, or did you see a particular instrument that grabbed your attention, or how did you kind of get your way into being what you would consider a musician at a young age?
Well, music is a language, and my parents were pretty fluent in that language, right? So my dad was a guitar player when he was younger, and then piano and trumpet and accordion player. And my mom was a real good singer. And I think if you want a kid to have some comfortability with music at all, you have to sing to them and around them. And I had plenty of that. But, you know, I guess both of my brothers did, and neither one of them sings, or as far as I can tell. So who knows where that all comes from. Like, yeah.
Is that hard for them? Do you, you know, with siblings sometimes?
Is it hard for them to sing, or hard not to sing?
Hard for them to sing, hard for them to, you know, it's such a precious thing to be able to make music. And sometimes people who don't quite get down that path, I think, have a hard time wishing they had gotten down it.
That's an interesting question. I would be curious to know if they really cared at all. I think they enjoy music. I know they enjoy music. And certainly at various times in their lives collected records that they liked and that sort of thing. But I've never heard either of them express any sadness about not being a singer or a guitar player a musician of any kind. That's just not in there.
I'll let you know what they said if they're listening. Maybe they'll spill the beans now or something. But well, I'd love to hear another one of your wonderful pieces, guys. If you'd honor us with a tune.
With the windows open, soak the dirt from under your nails and pour a double. You put a record on the table. The light's always perfect just before it fades. Bow your head down when you break breath together. Close your eyes and make a circle of hands. There is nothing that cannot be taken from you in this life. We just hold on to the love that we have. Swing the axe in the hour before daylight. Note the sparks that attend to the blade. A thing made free of itself leaps apart, and the heart divided would do just the same. Take the back roads with nobody on them. Find the river and make yourself clean. Go down the water if you would be delivered of sinner and sin. Outside, let the stars reel around you. Your cup, your hand around the bright flame in that dark place. Let the heavens confound you. It's all just a story, even the sound of your name.
So lovely. Dishes. I see that's the first track on your new album, Blood Brothers.
That's right. I thought we better get around to actually playing the songs from the new record.
Hey, that works great. Do you think in terms of albums these days? We have many or most of your albums. We're so fortunate here. We have this giant folk collection here in the Simply Folk section of the Wisconsin Public Radio Library, and I think I literally broke Ghost Repeaters and had to replace it with my own money. Uh-huh. Maybe I don't know if we have to edit that out or not, but the first one, Miles, maybe nobody knows. Miles from the Lightning, does it feel like a lifetime ago when you recorded that? Or
yes.
It does, yeah. Yep. I mean, that was really what, 2001, does. I believe?
It was 2000, yeah. So I recorded that mostly in the winter of 2000 here in Madison over a little house not too far away from the Capitol.
Right on.
In somebody's basement. A friend of mine, actually, who had a very nice collection of Neumann microphones, and we sat down and I didn't know anything about recording, and he was willing to work late and work slow, and so, you know, it never occurred to me that you would try to learn to play the song really well at home and then do it in three takes. So I would drive over to Madison and try to get the same song about 25 times and then go home. And, you know, there used to be a bar here in town that had a thing you could order called the Keith Richards, which was a triple espresso and an unfiltered Camel cigarette. And I would get done working with my friend Joel O'Neill here in town, and then I would have to still drive back to Fort Atkinson. So I'd go to this one bar, and I'd get the Keith Richards, and then I'd get in my little blue truck and head back down Highway 12.
Wow, I've been in Madison a long time, but I had not heard of the Keith Richards. So I'm glad to learn a little of my own history here. I haven't tried the Keith Richards, but maybe I'll see if somebody can duplicate it for me after our session here today. So back in 2000, 2001, one question that I think about a lot is you record an album, and it used to be that you would think of the album as, you know, you're going to listen to the whole album. The listener's going to wait for this precious thing, and then they're going to take it home, and they're going to lock themselves in a room and listen to it from beginning to end. And I love that experience. I grew up with that experience with my favorite artists, and then later becoming a musician, that's how I approach my music. But these days, I'm just a little saddened to see that the kids think more in terms of a single song. Not always, but they don't necessarily think of the album in order. It seems to me, now I could be wrong, but do you approach your album making now any differently because of the idea that songs are sold or downloaded more as singles as opposed to by entire albums, or does our sort of genre of music still rely on maybe an album flow?
No, yeah, I don't think about the single thing. That's a marketing thing that happens after the fact to me. And we all grew up on LP records, and we still think in terms of a album that you put on, and you might listen to like 20 minutes a side, and then you might get up and make a cup of coffee or something, come back and listen to the other side. And a good record has a sequence that leads you through the songs in a way that takes you somewhere, at least for me. And I think in those terms, and I don't really worry about whether or not anybody else does, and I've never expected anybody to get something that I made precisely the way I intended it to be understood, and I don't think it really matters if it works that way or not. So, to me, it's important for it to be an album and to think in those terms, but I don't know if anybody else necessarily does or doesn't.
Yeah, it's with the album approach, you can have those kind of little quieter songs that are going to be important to somebody, but we don't think about that. You know, there's more terrain in an album. You're allowed to have more highs and lows, I think. It seems to me more shape to it, whereas if you're put on the spot one song at a time, it kind of makes you think in a different way, I think.
Well, and we talk about this a lot in the band. You know, it may well be Adam Gopnik wrote a nice thing in The New Yorker about a year ago about the history of recorded music and the way that people experienced that music. And you know, we might be the only generation that thinks that you have to sit there and pay attention to a whole record. Music was for other stuff. It was either, you know, a religious celebration or a wedding or a feast or dancing. And, you know, if kids want to sit there and listen to really bad sound on earbuds and split the earbuds in half and each just get one part of the stereo signal, that's cool. You know, they're still going to enjoy the music. And, you know, the bass player Duck Dunn one time said, "Did you ever hear a bunch of people that were playing together and really cooking and it sounded bad?" Not probably. I have a lot of records, like early field recording records, and I'm perfectly happy to listen to them, even though in the strictest terms, the production value is very low, you know, in terms of how they were recorded, but they still have that spirit, right? So,
right.
I don't think it matters as long as people are still engaging with music in a way, I'd be more akin to get my nose out of joint about the justice of the way that people get paid for their intellectual property. I don't think too much about the aesthetic
right
side.
Right on. Well, I appreciate your thoughts on this subject. It's very near and dear to my heart, and probably to all of those who are listening to this lovely session with you guys here today. We have time for one more. Before we say goodbye, I'd like to thank you guys so much for taking some of your precious time on the road here today to come in here. I know you have a big night tonight. I'd like to thank my colleague Steve Gotcher so much for coming in today and doing this. Also engineer Tom Blaine and Stephanie Elkins for helping us get this show together before the scene. It is so appreciated. Thank you, Jeffrey Vocalt, for coming. Thank you, boys, for joining him. And from all of us here at Wisconsin Public Radio, safe travels. And we'd love to hear one more from you.
Thank you very much, Jess. Thanks for having us in here. It's wonderful.
You bet.
One, two, three, four.
sorrow, would you know my name? If I saw you, would you know my name? I used to know you, I used to be your man. We were lovers in the traveling time.
Good long tail. Blood Brothers, the title track off the new album by Jeffrey Foucault. Thank you so much for sharing your music with Simply Folk today.
Thank you very much for having us, and we had a great time.
Take care. We'll see you down the road.
Okay.